I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Our Core Listing, the podcast.
Hello and hello. Welcome to...
Go on, mate,
what
after
a
you.
Fantastic start.
Great start.
Ah, dear.
I think let's just keep it like that, Stu.
Of course, yeah. Don't worry, our listeners are very, very switched on to your levels of unprofessionalism. Right. Hello and welcome to Hardcore Listening Podcast. I'm Stu Whiffy. Joining me always, my co-host, co-creator and bell piece, Christopher William Glasson. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thanks, buddy. Oh, yeah. You good?
I'm all right. You waved when we first joined the call with your other hand and you had a big old... Right, what's going on now? You said the word surgery like it was like life and death the other day. And I was like, right, what's going on?
Wanker's whiplash. I had to have a mole removed.
Right.
So, yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Is that it?
No, yeah, pretty much. I had that whipped off. And it's the second one I've had done. And I let them start and then I start watching and they're like, oh, you're not squeamish. And I'm like, I'm really squeamish for like, if I give blood, I get really a bit like, I don't know what it is, but obviously taking a scalpel to my arm, I was like, oh, look. She's like, oh, okay. Yeah, you're not squeamish. And yeah, so weird sensation to not to be able to feel a part of your body, innit? Have you ever been under like local anaesthetic?
I got an iron filing in my eyeball. And I've actually had it twice, which is ridiculous. There's definitely something to be said for wearing safety goggles when you work in construction. And when I did, it happened twice. And the second time, first time they just literally whipped it out. But the second time they sprayed my eye with this really weird stuff and numbed it. And it kind of completely messed with my balance. It was a really strange sensation. And then I watched this kind of like tweezers go into my eyeball.
Oh, God.
And pluck this thing out. And I could see it. And obviously your natural reaction is to flinch and to... But it was very surreal because literally see someone rummaging around in your eye. And it was way more dangerous and interesting than your wrist.
Well, I guess we'll find out once we have the biopsy, won't we, on how dangerous that is. But yeah,
oh, is that what it was for?
Oh no, I mean, like they always check, don't they? Make sure the mole's gone wrong. But
I'm glad you kept that in the back pocket just to make me feel like
shit. Yeah, I wasn't going to let
amazing.
I might have cancer. I wasn't going to let you beat me with your stupid eye story. Although that could be like a scene out of a horror film, couldn't it? Like,
yeah.
Which is I've intentionally done that as a segue to our wonderful guest today. But I guess before we do that, we should give a quick shout out to two other horror shows, which are our sponsors.
Absolutely.
So,
we'll kick things off.
Who are you going to go with?
I said we're going to kick things off. So there's another tenuous link there. So I'm going to go for the Samur Academy. If you have never done it, but have always fancied the idea of learning martial arts, then go check out salmon-academy.co.uk because Sai over there is a wonderful human being and basically can sort of tailor martial arts classes and one-to-one lessons for whatever whatever you're looking to get from it. And Chris and I, as you know, we've banged on about it enough, have done martial arts and various different styles for years and years and years. And it's not just good for you know, the physical side of you, but it's also really good for your head, and it gives you so much confidence. And it, so I recently done a class on women's self-defense, and I went along to that and just
hit behind a wall
and hit behind a wall and just jumped out on random women. No, but it was a fantastic thing that he done there, and it wasn't just the sort of physicalities of being able to look after yourself in them sort of situations. It was also some real good pointers as to kind of evade situations like that, and things that you can do just walking down the street that can help you, you know, not find yourself in a really, really awful situation. But like you say, there's also incredible just straight up martial arts classes as well. So all you need to do is head over to summer-academy.co.uk, or he'll be tagged in this on the socials. So give him a follow on the socials and drop him a message if you're interested in learning some martial arts. Who else, Christopher?
Indeed. We have got Big Papa J and the Notorious FAT and their Say What podcast, sometimes featuring the Lady P. I very much hope you guys who listen to this have had a chance to listen to that absolute drivel of a podcast. If you like our show, well, you're obviously going to like Justin talking to Tony about, well, God knows what.
Monkeys with Machine Guns was
the most recent one. I quite enjoyed the David Dickinson episode. And hopefully we'll be joining them for a podcast shortly. So, yeah, go and give those guys a listen too.
They will also be tagged in this. So go give them a follow and a like and a love and a share and a retweet and all that gubbins. Christopher, introduce our guest, please.
We have today writer, producer, director, man of many ideas, and I had the pleasure to catch up with him for a pint and a pizza the other week with Scroobius Pip. We have Jed Shepherd.
Hey guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, we did.
Absolute pleasure.
That's my favourite pizza place in London.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so good. But yeah, nice to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Before we get into your top fives and that, let's break down the pizza place. Where was it? What did you have? I've not had lunch yet.
It's a place called Made of Dough in Peckham on Bellenden Road. And actually, we should have went on a Monday because it's half price on Monday, by the way, even though it was very reasonable. Yeah, it's just really nice pizza, proper, like those Italian big stone oven things. It was just lovely with a bit of burrata on it and chili oil. It was great.
Can't go wrong.
Paid for it as well, so it tastes even better when it's free. Yeah,
he did. Yeah, we got spoiled. Stu, by the way, Jed, as soon as you said Made of Dough, Stu probably couldn't get past how good a name that was for pizza.
Yeah, it blew my mind. I'm not going to lie.
Stu's like the prominent, whenever I need an idea for a name of something, Jed, I'm just like, Stu, I just give him two things and like give him a minute and a quality name. That could be a side business for you, Stu, is shop names, I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Made of Dough is fantastic.
It's great. I have to actually go to another pizza place today. I'm going to a pizza place in Camden called True Romance that's showing Blair Witch Project, and then there's a little Q&A thing afterwards. But yeah, I seem to be in the pizza business right now.
Who's the Q&A on the Blair Witch thing?
Me.
Amazing.
Just because I guess I'm a Blair Witch expert, I guess. Yeah. So, we can go into that a bit later. But yeah. I'm usually called upon for any kind of horror related things in London if they need someone to talk about horror things.
Oh, you in? Well, that's what we're here to do today. You've picked a top five. Yeah. I very much enjoy. I've just knocked my microphone off. 2 seconds.
I mean, I've got to be transparent with you, Jed. This is going to be an interesting one, right? Because of the three of us, me, Pip, and Chris, Pip and Chris are obsessed with horror. Mm-hmm. Let me give you the measure of the last time we done top five zombie films. It was brought to my attention that Dog Soldiers wasn't a zombie film, which was my suggestion.
They told me this. They both told
me. Already sold you out, mate. We could wait
I'm glad
to say.
The Dog Soldiers thing preceded me. Amazing.
Yeah. I'm sure Stu's going to come in with some interesting comments while we roll through your top five today, mate. So without further ado, what top five have you gone for?
So I've gone for top five underrated British horror movies. Feel like, because people forget that we have horror movies over here. It's all like American stuff, maybe some stuff in Europe and Canada and Australia. But we forget that we're the originators. We've been doing horror since day dot. So yeah, I just thought today I'd highlight some of the ones that maybe have passed some people by.
Yeah, fantastic. Do you have an order, like from 5 to 1, or are they just generally 5 that you really like?
Just 5 I like, yeah.
That's great. It's,
yeah. There's maybe one, and I'll leave it till last, and that'll be my favourite one, I guess.
Cool.
But yeah, do you want me to get cracking?
Fire away, yeah. Throw one in there, mate.
All right. Well, my first pick is a film called The Plague of the Zombies, which is a very generic film. It's from 1966. And that's very important, the year it came out. Because this was a zombie film 2 years before Night of the Living Dead. And even though Night of the Living Dead, George Romero's amazing Night of the Living Dead, is the template, this came 2 years before. So all I'm saying is we invented zombie movies, proper zombie movies. And I am sure Romero saw Plague of the Zombies and was just like, I'll have some of that. I'll have some of that. And the thing I love about this is it's so British. It's basically it's a town in Cornwall. It is a doctor is going nuts because everyone is dying in the village of mysterious circumstances. And then other weird stuff's happening too. So he calls his teacher from London, from the Big Smoke, and he's like, I need your help. Thinks weird stuff's happening here, and people are dying. I don't know why. And the townsfolk won't let me autopsy them. So the London doctor comes and helps him. Within 5 seconds, there's zombies. It's zombies. And he's like, and there's this whole thing about... the townsfolk are in on it. They do these voodoo rituals. They believe in these like old gods or whatever. And they are basically killing some of the townsfolk, turning them into zombies so they can work down the mines. It's a very, very British way of doing things. But it's just absolutely brilliant. It's a hammer horror film as well. And one of the absolute best. Really, really good. Very, I would say, very un-PC in a number of different ways. It's wrong for many reasons, but it's still visually beautiful. And yeah, they did a thing. What Hammer does, they filmed a few films back to back. So there's a bunch of films around the same time with the exact same sets set in Cornwall to kind of like save their money. But man, it's a great film.
I love Romero, the Hammer Horrors are good.
Yeah.
Did Romero ever credit or acknowledge that film?
No, yeah, I don't think so. No, yeah. I mean, I'm sure if you go back, there's probably an interview where he says he likes it. But yeah, it's, I mean, there were zombie movies before 1966, but I feel like this has a lot of the elements for zombies now, the way they look, the way they kind of walk and act and their kind of motivations. And it harks back to the original zombie movies, which were all about in Haiti when they were kind of dead, but kind of not dead. They were basically people who made these other people work as slaves, as like unpaid slaves. So they made them in the zombie kind of fugue state. And that's kind of where the zombie thing came from. So yeah, and here you have some of the kind of Haiti voodoo, you know, influence in a little town in Cornwall for some reason. But it's really, really, they throw in fox hunting and the dangers of fox hunting.
That's it.
This is in 1966 as well. But it's just visually like beautiful, like all Hammer movies.
Yeah, I think I just love, like, there's so many Hammer horrors or they go down to Cornwall and Devon. In actually, fact, in a lot of your 5, they all sort of like end up in the southwest coast. But yeah, they made a bunch of films around that time, didn't they? They're all on the same sort of production schedule. So you had another one I really like called Dracula, Prince of Darkness, which was Christopher Lee, obviously. Mm-hmm. But this one was really good, and I forgot, like, when you put these 5, it's like I've seen a lot of these films, but a long time ago, in a time where I had a TV in my bedroom as a kid and would just be like, oh shit, what am I going to treat myself? What am I going to see now? Because you didn't really get to pick what was on. And it's like, oh, it's a Hammer horror, deal with it. And I love the whole theme of zombie films where it is like witch doctory stuff. Like you said, like White Zombie was the first one where they weren't quite like as more they are today. But I say bring back the voodoo for zombies. Like, a lot of the time now, in more recent years, it's like biological accidents. Yeah. And I'm like, no, get some voodoo back. Get some witch doctors going. It's great. I
love all that stuff. And this was made for 100 grand, by the way. But, I mean, 100 grand in 1966 was probably like 1.5 mil or something. But still, cheap as chips.
Where did your passion for horror arise? I mean, Chris just touched on there of just kind of watching old Hammers, you know, in his bedroom when he was a kid. Like, was it similar for you?
I've mentioned this in places before, but I'm half Filipino, so I don't know if you guys know many Filipino people, but they are very, very into the supernatural. Like, it's rare to find a person from Philippines who doesn't believe in ghosts, not just like stories, but actually physical manifestations that they can see every day. I grew up with my mum telling me these things were real. Werewolves were real. She told me werewolves were real. She said she's seen it. My mum, legit.
Fucking hell.
Yep, she's legit seen a werewolf. This is her words. She's seen a werewolf. And not only a werewolf playing a flute. Now, that is talent.
Wow, yeah.
Because imagine those big furry fingers on those holes.
Yeah. That's terrifying in itself, the werewolf's dedication to music.
Yeah, and like, so many questions, Mum. I grew up thinking like all these things were real. So, you know, as a kid, you think, okay, I'm going to come up again. I'm going to meet a werewolf. I'm going to meet a vampire. I need to know how to kill these bastards. So I would go into the school library and I'd read every horror book I can, every old story about monsters. I would send off mail orders for American magazines about like ghosts and ghouls and goblins. I always just love being in an airport because you get a bigger selection of like weird magazines. So I'd go into W.H. Smith's and just get, oh, it's a weird magazine about monsters. I'd get that. I went to America when I was a kid as well, just brought back loads of monster stuff. And then like...
So that would have been like Fangoria and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. All that lovely stuff. And then obviously, you know, when I was a kid, and this is like way too long, like 6 and 7, like friends would share like VHS from their older brothers and their parents and stuff. So I watched like Evil Dead 2 first, Nightmare on Elm Street, like when I was like 6, 7, and all those things just fascinated me so much. And again, it wasn't like entertainment to me. It was like education. I was like, okay, I need to know about these monsters because like, in case I meet one. So I've just had that same thirst for knowledge about like monsters and supernatural and horror since a very young age. It just hasn't stopped. And genuinely, and I know a lot of people say this, the second I wake up, I'm like, okay, I need to figure out how I can fit in one or two horror movies today. And I'm always researching. I'm always looking into mythologies from other cultures as well and thinking, oh, how can I weave that into something I'm doing right now? So it's, you know, it's a 24/7 thing for me. I can't turn off.
You basically, your mum set you on a road to defend, to learn how to defend yourself against the dark arts and dark forces. And as a result of that, you now got a career in making movies.
Yeah. It's weird. I'm in a real unique position where just because like I had this weird upbringing thinking monsters were real, I am like one of the, I guess, lead experts in horror now in this entire country, which is handy. But the problem is, like, I'm saturated now. I'm on every single horror documentary of the last 2 years, and like, I'm in the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre documentary, and I'm just like, why am I in this? And like, literally, I got to set, and I was just like, why am I in this? Like, I'm not from Texas. I'm not American. Everyone else in it is from the film, worked on the film, or is like, you know, a big director, and they're just like, because you know horror, and it's a weird skill, and like it's just managed to kind of like transfer to like work, I guess. But yeah, it's cool to be doing the thing that like is my hobby and the thing that I love the most as well.
I mean, that's the sweet spot, right? Is that if you have that such a strong passion for something that you're habitually watching horror films, right?
Yeah.
And so, and that sort of like attraction that to the lore of it as well.
Yeah.
You know, that becomes a niche subject, and then you find yourself doing that, or you've murdered someone with a chainsaw, and I'm not rolling that out.
Well, one day I'm sure I will, but that's the thing. I don't know if you remember, like, but like back in the days, back in like 90s, like it was horror was in the news for being like really bad. Like, if you watch horror movies, you could be a serial killer. Yeah. There's a bunch of horror movies banned because they thought it corrupted children's minds. It was a bit worse in America, but over here it was quite bad too. But that just made me, and like, I didn't know anyone else who was into horror as well. So it was a real solitary, you know, journey with these horror movies. So, but now, like, you know, it's everyone's into horror. It's completely mainstream now. So,
It's mad you say, like, back in the day, and you referenced 90s films. I'm old as fuck, Jed, and I grew up at the time of the Video Nasty in the early 80s, and I can't get past. I mean, my favorite horror film by a mile. Unless we're classing Jaws as a horror, I'm going to go American Werewolf in London, right?
Yes, yeah.
And when I saw that when I was way too young, and that absolutely scared the living shit out of me, to the fact that my dad had to sit on the landing outside my bedroom door until I went to sleep for about 2 years, right? Had my mum just gone, yeah, they're fucking real. I've seen one playing a fucking flute.
Yeah.
Mate, my dad would still be sitting on my landing now.
You know they're rebooting American Werewolf in London. They're making a new one. I don't know if it's been announced yet, actually, but... No, actually, it hasn't been announced yet. So heads up.
They're making
a new American Werewolf in London, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be really hard, though, because... Mm-hmm. Like, so the original's so good, and I feel like they accidentally made a classic, because the fine line between horror and comedy there, it's so hard to replicate. Like, so I'm looking forward to it.
It's funny, that is a bit of a link back to Plague of Zombies, because that was like, of the four that they made around that time, they were like, two were like their ones that they were really honing in on, like Dracula, Prince of Darkness. But I think Plague of the Zombies was kind of like, oh, well, we're going to do this. And then actually, though, it just was a success. You know, people really rate that as one of the best Hammer ones.
It is. It might even be my favourite Hammer film, but it just doesn't get talked about at all, because obviously all the Universal monsters that Hammer kind of licensed, like all the Frankenstein, Dracula stuff, that is, that's what people think Hammer's about. But no, there's just cool stuff like Plague of the Zombies and the Reptile, which was the other one kind of made around this time. There's Hammer and this other company studio called Amicus. They're around the same time doing amazing British movies. There's an Amicus movie that we'll talk about in a bit, actually.
Lovely stuff. And Stu, hopefully when this when American Werewolf comes out, mate, we'll go to the cinema together.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'll come with you.
And, love that, Jed. Absolutely, mate. If you're, I just figure you're going to probably be in the premiere doing an interview about it. But if you're not, then 100%, man. We'll get Pip on that as well.
Excellent, mate.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
One of us has got to go as a a rotting corpse, right? You've got to have, sit in the cinema. Ooh,
that's
next
true.
To,
yeah.
Like, I'd love that.
And Pip can go as a werewolf with a flute.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to sound interesting. All he needs to do is take his clothes off. That guy's hairy. He's hairy, and he's got a long body like a lichen. It's a very, very long body, is that?
Absolutely.
That guy's got.
He's about 70% there in the change, isn't he?
Yeah.
The hands are already there by
they
a mile.
Really are.
Hairiest fingers ever.
Well, lovely stuff, man. Shall we move on to one of your next choices then, mate?
Yeah, the next one is, it's an amazing film. It's by a guy, and I'm going to get this wrong because his name's like Polish, by Jerzy Skolimowski, and he's the writer and director of an amazing film called The Shout, which is a 1978 British horror film. And this one is so interesting because if you're into podcasts or you're a musician, you should check out this because, again, it's set in the UK in the 70s, though it kind of looks very 60s-ish. It is about this couple who live in this lovely little house, and he works in audio. He's like a musician. He messes around with audio and he does electronic stuff. And then this random stranger turns up in their house. And he's a guy, he's very, very strange. And you think he's kind of got designs on the wife of the couple, because the wife's played by Susanna York, who in all of these type of films, she's always the wife that gets attacked, the girlfriend that gets attacked. But this guy, what he tells this couple, this mysterious guy, is he's figured out how to kill people with audio, with sound. So with a shout, and he's learned it from a shaman. So that's why this is called The Shout. And it's about the kind of journey. And some of it is very surreal, by the way. It's about, you know, this discovery and the implementation of this shout and what happens. But it's really, really interesting. I think it's a classic. And I don't want to spoil too much, but this one's totally under the radar. I think I originally saw it. I think it might have been at the BFI, like, maybe about 10 years ago or something. You can actually watch this on YouTube. Like, I think I watched it a couple of years ago on YouTube as well. It's fantastic. It's really, really, really good and just very strange. And it makes you think, how did they get away with making movies like this? And they were just allowed to. Whereas now it's just so, you know, anything that isn't just obviously commercial kind of is really difficult to get made, especially in this country. And this will be a running theme throughout this whole thing, how hard it is to make horror films in this country now. It's almost impossible. This guy came over, he made it for very little money. It didn't make much money in the box office, which is probably why you haven't heard too much about it. But it was nominated for a Palme d'Or at Cannes in 78. So, you know, it was kind of critically acclaimed. It just never crossed over to mainstream.
To be fair, man, this is the one out of the four that you... five you suggested. This is one I hadn't seen, and I still haven't watched it. So I was tempted to. I didn't know whether to watch it before or listen to what you had to say about it. Because sometimes I find it more interesting if we come to something a bit cold.
Yeah,
and so that's kind of what I did with that. I mean, I looked at briefly that it's got John Hurt in it, and the premise sounds really good.
John Hurt, you know. Tim Curry, Susanna York, Jim Broadbent. But they are very nice. Minor characters. Mm. Like Susanna York is one of the main characters, but it's Alan Bates is the mysterious guy. So yeah, you know, it's like 70s British kind of character actors all through this. Tim Curry isn't in it very much, but you know, he's still great.
Susanna York was a huge star then. She would have been a huge mainstream actor as well.
Yeah, and with John Hurt as well, but like. You know, this just didn't do very, very well. It made, I'm looking at it here, it made 170 grand at the box office. And even in the late 70s, that wouldn't cover its costs. I'd really, really liked this to be more revered because the ideas in this and the cinematography is absolutely beautiful as well. And just that concept of a sound that can kill people, which we kind of, did I, subconsciously ripped this off. We did. Me and Rob did this short film called Dawn of the Deaf about a sound that kills people. Maybe subconsciously, this is where it's from.
Like, sometimes it's hard to like cover it all though, because the horror genre is such a deeply stacked. Like, I was on a podcast the other day, the Spooky Shelf podcast with Joe Diggory, and we were just talking about like how many horrors can you name that are on trains. Mm-hmm. And like, there's so many that you can easily forget something, and they're, you know, it's like you say, Dawn of the Deaf, it's very difficult for you to definitely know whether or not that's going to be, there's going to be some themes. And in most many horrors share similar themes. There was one called one that was quite slept on that I love. Have you ever heard, you've seen Pontypool?
Love Pontypool.
Oh, so good.
Love it. I quote Pontypool to people. They have no idea what I'm talking about. Love that film, man. Yeah. So good. So contained. I would like to see that on, like, I was thinking someone should convert that to a stage show, like in the theatre, because it's mostly just one room. Yeah. But, and it's just a DJ just speaking into his mic. Yeah. And I was like, wow, you, like, this has painted such a vivid picture of this world becoming infested with the zombies. And it's just a DJ speaking into his mic. It's amazing.
Yeah. And the things that he's hearing from the reporters around around the area. And like you said, that's such a good idea. It could be a stage show. But I also love the fact, like with Pontypool and a lot of horrors, they almost get extra marks when they're done on a shoestring budget with not a lot of money. I mean, me, you and Pip were talking about this, like the creativity that it forces. Mm-hmm. And Pontypool does it. It just feels like, oh God, it's within reach. Like if you love horror and you want to get out there, you can do it. You can make something like that. I think like it shares what you did with Host. You guys, Rob and Gemma wrote Host. It's got that sort of thing of, well, it's lockdown. Really, we've got a bunch of limitations. Yeah. And actually those limitations can force that sort of creativity.
Yeah, totally. Like we wouldn't have made it if it wasn't for the lockdown, and you know, we made it for very little money. Like it'll be the cheapest movie you can think of, and we spun gold out of nothing really. And of course we didn't expect it, and that's it makes it feel even more special, because like maybe I tell a lie. I think me and Rob secretly knew, like between us, okay, we
you're onto something.
Nothing special here, but like I think everyone else, like especially the cast was so blasé about it. They were just like, because we were every day we were just, you know, we were watching movies on like Netflix Party, whatever it was called at the time, every single day, and so we were jumping on Zoom all the time, and we just like, oh, let's make a little film. We didn't know if it was going to be 5 minutes, if it was going to be 2 hours. We just made it, and you know, it turned out to be Host. Like it's crazy. And I sometimes think, what would have happened if we hadn't made Host, if we continued to do what we were doing before, which was we were going to make a film with Sam Raimi. That's what me and Rob were just about to do before COVID hit. So it would have been a very different situation, I think.
Are you going to go back to do that film with Sam? Do you know if there's any chance that you can do that? I mean, I'm sure that
at some point. I mean, like Sam Raimi, a bit of a flex. He's like my mentor. So me and him are working on a whole bunch of stuff. He just helped on a project I just finished just now, and like we're looking to do some more stuff. But he's a very busy guy, and his last film made $1 billion. So you know, him messing around with my little things is it feels very strange when like literally he made the last good Marvel movie in my eyes.
Man, that's what a privilege to have him there. And you know, you've earned it, mate. You've done your homework.
Thanks,
you've done your homework out of being petrified that you might see a werewolf with a fucking flute.
That's why I think me and Sam bond quite a lot, because I think Sam's probably used to having to, you know, not dumb himself down with horror, but like he probably doesn't get to be the, because he is just he's just a horror geek. He's just a film geek. All he wants to do is talk about films, little nuances and little things about films from the past. And like I've got this weird memory where I can pinpoint little things, especially with Sam Raimi films, because he was helping with this one particular shot in this film I just did. And I was, oh yeah, you did that in this scene in Crime Wave. And he was like, you've seen Crime Wave? And I'm like, yeah, man, I love Crime Wave. And he was like, oh, do I owe you any money? And I'm like, no. I don't know if you guys know about Crime Wave, but Crime Wave is the movie Sam Raimi directed after Evil Dead, which completely bombed. It was written by the Coen brothers. And it's the reason why Sam went back and did Evil Dead 2, because he needed a hit. And it's also the reason why the Coen brothers started directing, because they hated what Sam did on Crime Wave. So that film, Crime Wave, basically kickstarted, Sam Raimi's, the rest of Sam Raimi's career, plus the Coen brothers, because that film's so shit. But I actually love Crime Wave.
The ripple effect.
It's, yeah.
should we step on to number three?
Yeah, let's do it.
Number three is Deathline, which I absolutely love. It's also called Raw Meat in America. But Deathline, directed by Gary Sherman, is amazing because it is, I think it was one of the first horror movies I'd seen that was, besides American Werewolf in London, that was set in London. And I remember watching this, I think it was one of those Jonathan Ross Presents on Channel 4 type vibes, where he presented a horror film late at night, and it was Deathline, and it's a horror film set on the London Underground. So anything, because most of the things we consume are American, so anything set in the UK, especially London, I'm all over that. And this film's great. It's basically about a couple of students who decide to investigate a missing person, realize that they'd gone onto the Underground and went missing. And then you hear about a cave-in that happened in the 1800s where potentially a group of people got caved in and then started their own cannibalistic society underground in the London, which is now the London Underground. It's amazing. And Donald Pleasance is in it, hamming it up, basically doing his thing that he did in Halloween, yeah. But in London. I absolutely bloody love this movie. And like me and Rob Savage, like we've always thought about remaking this Deathline. And at one point we almost did. It was on a list of films that we were given to potentially remake, and people were like, oh, but the original's so good, why would we do this to ourselves?
When did it come out, Jed?
1972. And it looks like it as well. And there's been a lot of films since, horror movies set on the London Underground, but I think this is by far the best one. And there's nods to it in that film Creep that came out about 15 years ago as well, but this is the best one of all that stuff. Really grimy London, a little bit like how you see New York in like New York Ripper or like in the late 70s early 80s movies. That's London, so seedy. And we forget, like, London's so, you know, it's so relatively clean compared to how it was in the 70s. Jeez Louise, it is dirty, grimy. It just feel like you're going to get attacked every 5 seconds. And these, and it's got all the classic kind of actors from the time. You've got Christopher Lee, Donald Pleasance, Hugh Armstrong. He's in a whole bunch of these, and David Ladd. It is great. It is really, really good.
It does look like it needs a good wash. I mean, and you do, like, you do, it does remind me of those sort of like those New York movies, or like films like there's one called Street Trash that was
Trash.
But like when I remember the first time I watched Street Trash, my stomach was it feels grimy, doesn't it? How it's shot, it's brilliant. It's meant to do that. It's meant to make you feel repulsed in many ways because of the commentary it's trying to give. But I think like you said with like Creep, the monster in Creep, it don't get me like Deathline, because I think the guy that the cannibalistic, inbred, plague-ridden dude, he still looks more human, but he just looks a bit more mean, and he's a dribbler, Stu. He dribbles a lot, and I don't know, there's something in that that just, like, there's scenes in it where he's abducted someone, and he's trying to be, in some way, affectionate before he goes a bit darker. And the sort of, like, drool is just coming from his chin on his hand, and I don't know, there's just something so tacit about that. It just makes you feel, oh, get away from me. It's really good.
Yeah. And like just the tone, I think it's just the 70s. And in America there were a lot of those kind of paranoid against the government movies. But at the same time there was a lot of like cannibal movies. It's the rise of the cannibal movies. And this is kind of piggybacking off the rise of the cannibal movies. But it's so grim, and like you know, if it was made now, there would be like, you know, literal light at the end of the tunnel. But here, there's not. It just feels like there's no hope. London is screwed. Everyone is screwed. These things are going to get you. Yeah, it is. It's kind of depressing in a very entertaining way. And I just love the shots of like just seeing old train stations from back in the day, Russell Square and Holborn and stuff. And they look very similar to how they were now, just a little bit cleaner, I guess. A few less cannibals around now, but yeah, it's approximately the same.
Newer that, trains, basically. Yeah. But yeah.
They were the video nasties as well. Cannibal Ferox, Cannibal Holocaust, they were all being passed around.
Love all those movies. Yeah.
Again, just horrific. Like, absolutely terrified me.
It's Cannibal Holocaust is... I really like that movie. I know it's kind of controversial to say, but like, because, you know, they killed a bunch of real animals on set.
Oh,
and
yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
The director, I mean, he's since apologized, but he's an arse. He's dead now, rest in peace. But he was an asshole. He treated everyone like crap on set. He basically abused like all the actors. But what we're left with is a movie that is of its time. And it's very, 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 very effective for what he's trying to do. He wanted to gross people out. He wanted to scare people. And it's also the dawn, I think, of found footage, Cannibal Holocaust, because, you know, that's the conceit. At least part of the film, the conceit is shot on found film. But yeah, this feels equally as grimy, Deathline. And basically... anything at all with Donald Pleasance in it, I'll watch as well.
I think he brings a bit of light to it, right? Like his character, whilst intelligent, is also his ego a little bit gets in the way to the investigation, and he has a little bit of rivalry with Christopher Lee's cameo as somebody who works with for MI5. He pops his head in. But Donald Pleasance throughout it is just super entertaining to watch, and he's obviously he's been in so many horror films. He's a cornerstone of it, isn't he, really?
He's
a lot of fun in it. And there is a little bit, like, even with some of the dark, like, there's this weird thing in it, Stu, where obviously these cannibals, they're stuck underground. They haven't learned to talk, or they've lost the capacity, and they mumble things, and you're not quite sure what they're saying. Then more towards the end of it, this cannibal keeps saying, "Hold the door." And it's like it's horrible. And it's grim, and throughout this film, I felt sorry for the monster because he loses his wife, and it's just like, it's fucking traumatic, really, until he starts killing everyone. But then, like, even at the end, like, the last thing you hear is "hold the door," and like, I think there's a little bit of lightness there because, like, as you say, Jen, it is like, it's pretty gritty, but yeah, it's great. It's good film.
Yeah, and I just think for how good it is, it just doesn't get talked about enough. Mm. And like, not seeing it in like lists of like best British movies, let alone horror movies, I think it should be like at least the top 100 best British movies for me, just because it's such a product of its time. But also, it's showing you London, and I love films that show London, like American Werewolf in London, showing you London, which is great.
Man, the underground scene in American Werewolf in London is just it's amazing.
Love it, I think they use the same stations as well.
Yeah, I mean the final scene with the coming out of the cinema where the car crashes and that, it's a fucking amazing scene.
Yeah,
Number two, please, Jed.
So again, this is not in any particular order. But this is my penultimate one. It's From Beyond the Grave, which is a anthology movie from Amicus Studios, and Amicus were kind of like a rival to Hammer, amazing British company. They realized that British anthologies were the way to go, and they would get their bang for the buck by basically doing these, you know, 4-3 stories with a wraparound, and they realised that you could get like big name British TV actors like for the day and only have to pay them for a day and just get them in to do a few lines, and then you could use their name, and that's how they would get people in. You'd say Diana Dawes is in this one; she's only in it for 2 minutes, but it was great. And they started their first, one of their first films was Tales from the Crypt. So people think Tales from the Crypt was, you know, an American movie. Tales from the Crypt is a British movie, and then it became American afterwards. So Amicus did these anthology movies. It made them a whole bunch of money. Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, Torture Garden, The House That Dripped Blood, Asylum, which is really good. And they did The Vault of Horror, which is also amazing. But like towards the end of Amicus's kind of run, they did a film called From Beyond the Grave, which is one of my favorite ones. And From Beyond the Grave, I mean, there's a million stars in it, but okay, it stars the late, great David Warner as well, who's, as soon as you see him in the film, you know, oh, wow, this is going to be good. And it just has this aesthetic about it. It's amazing. And Peter Cushing's in this as well, by the way. He's the kind of the wraparound. He owns this like antique shop, which is the kind of the foundation for all the other stories to bounce off. But yeah, David Warner is amazing. And he buys this antique mirror in it. And it's like, you know, it's like a fairy tale. There's this creature, this man in the mirror telling him to kill people. So he goes out and finds a prostitute, brings her back, kills her for the mirror because the mirror is telling him what to do. And it's just amazing, weird stories like that, but set in London, and you can see London in the background. And it's I'm just so nostalgic, even though I wasn't alive. I'm so nostalgic for like 70s London. It just looks so cool. And yeah, and this is, you know, I'm always about promoting Amicus, and I think someone should reboot them. And if I had the opportunity, I would, because like for a very, very small British studio, they managed to achieve, you know, worldwide like success with Tales from the Crypt. It's still going, basically. Yeah. Like I know, I think the guy who ran it, his kids maybe ran it for a little while, but I don't think they do anymore. But yeah, it's one of those things I think we could do again as a country if we invested in our film industry, into our horror film industry as well. It would be great, because one of my biggest pet peeves with how we are, the infrastructure of British Film Fund at the moment, is we use public money, lottery money, grants and all that, to fund films through the BFI that are for a very, very niche audience, arty films. And I think you should use public money to fund movies for the public, not for a very niche amount of people. I think there is a place for, you know, arty films, because maybe they wouldn't get made otherwise. But when you're using that money to make costume dramas all the time, or poverty porn, that's the two movies the BFI fund, poverty porn and costume dramas. And I'm sick of them. I'm sick of them. That's not representative of the UK. It's not representative or even of London. They're two massive extremes. What about everything in between?
Why do you think they've got this obsession with it?
I think because they like awards, and those type of things historically have gotten awards.
Yeah, gotcha.
And they want to be able to like go to their mates. Hey, look, we won this award. We won this award. We won this award. But how about making a sustainable film industry instead? How about making a film that people want to see? We can see from the box office, people want to see superhero movies, action movies, and horror movies. Okay, forget about superhero movies. We'll never be able to make good ones of those. Let's make some action movies. We've got martial artists here, amazing martial artists who just go to America to do stuff. We've got amazing horror film creators here who, again, they make one good film and they swan off to America. Every single one of our good directors leave the UK to make films because they don't get funded here. So I think let's make movies that people want to see here, like what Amicus used to do, and then we have a sustainable industry because money will be coming back instead of never making a profit because you don't have to because you're an art fund and you're a charity.
Yeah.
So, So that's why I think doing something like this where we could, for very little money, you could harness popular TV stars from around the UK, put them all into one film, it'll bring people in, and and then we
It's something you thought a lot about on, man. And like Amicus, it was done on a like you said, I didn't know this. Like, it makes sense now when you say it, but like how they would get in big stars for like one day shoots and how that really suits anthologies. Like, it's a clever like how you write a good horror script that doesn't cost a lot. It's just clever thought or clever planning about even the structure of the company, mm-hmm. and how you decide to then produce so it can start feeding itself.
Yeah.
If someone can get behind it, then yeah, hopefully that'll reboot exactly. the industry.
Yeah.
Man, like, we'll see you at the front of that at some point, Jeb.
Hopefully, yeah. Well, I'm trying to start my own production company as well, but I'm not going to just be one of those people that start a production company and then don't do anything. It needs to be, the infrastructure needs to be there. There needs to be a constant fund coming in every year. So I could, but this is the kind of thing I would do. I would do a British anthology, utilize the same tricks they did in the 60s and the 70s. And I just feel like people don't understand how we became the biggest like horror film industry for like about 20, 30 years, and how it kind of slipped away, mostly because the funding disappeared and went towards other things. But yeah, I am on my soapbox a lot about about this. One day we'll see.
That's what I'm glad we chatted about it, Jed, to be honest with you. Like, the podcast does go in different angles. It's nice to get your insight on those bits and pieces.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, From Beyond the Grave. It was an anthology. Like you say, I think Donald Pleasance is back in that one as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he's in this with Diana Dawes.
Very hazy memory of this. What was it? Like you said, the mirror one. I thought that I remember that one being pretty cool. And what are the other ones? There's one where there's a presence, and they try and exercise it with a clairvoyant.
So each of the segments relate to an object that was bought from the antique shop or was in the antique shop. So the whole wraparound is Peter Cushing, like, you know, saying, quality, how about this object? It's a real good...
Because he gets screwed up, like, every time. Mm-hmm. They sort of, like, shortchange him on what they biced you as well. Like, the mirror, he says it's worth a lot of money. I don't know how much it is. Mm-hmm. And then he ends up taking £25 for it, and then someone else swaps a price tag or something. So every time you fuck over the shopkeeper, actually it comes and bites you on the ass. Do you like Garth Marenghi?
Love Garth Marenghi.
Oh, dude, have you done his tour where he's done this Teratome thing?
No, I've not yet. No, I'm gutted. I will. I keep missing it. I love all those guys, and Alice Lowe worked with a whole bunch, and so was Pip now as well. I absolutely love Garth Marenghi. Like, I want more.
So funny.
I want more. Six episodes. That's all we got.
Not enough.
Magic.
It's absolutely so funny. And Teratome is great, but in that, there's parts to that book, and in that he goes to a store and the store owner basically sells him a psychic typewriter. It's fucking amazing, man. But if he does if he does the live show back in London again, mm-hmm. I would go back and watch it, because it was absolutely quality. It's Matt Holness who did made Possum, didn't he?
He's great.
Possum, I thought, was fucking... That was quality. It's funny, because when you were going to do
grim,
underrated
though.
Horrors, it is well grim. There's some lines of dialogue in that that just make me just feel sick. And I thought maybe if you'd have done a more recent one, I figured Possum might appear on that, because it kind of like... My mates hadn't really heard of it. I was like... Yeah.
I kind of wanted to do things a little bit older just because, you know, it's... But yeah, maybe if I did a more modern version of this, Possum would be on it. It is good, but it's just so grim. I felt really like off and depressed after watching.
Yeah, a bit different from Garth Marenghi.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, right. Shall we hit the final
top
one?
Spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the final one is the Bernard Rose movie, Paper House, from 1988. And Bernard Rose is the guy that he directed Candyman. A few years later, which is what he's mostly known for. But this was the film he did before. And I mean, Candyman's one of the best horror movies ever, but I prefer Paper House. And people have slept on this, but I remember getting this out of Blockbuster, or actually maybe it was my kind of local video store, constantly. You know when sometimes you used to get like three videos for £10 and you'd pick two of the newer ones and you go, okay, I need one that's been out for a while, that's only like $1.99 now. Okay, And it was all for me. It was either Paper House or Labyrinth or something like that. I absolutely love it. And it's about a little girl who's sick. She's sick at home, and she draws. And the things she draws when she falls asleep, she sees them. So she draws, and to be fair, her illustration skills are borderline terrible. So she draws a crooked house, and in her dream, you see that crooked house perfectly, you know, manifested, but in a really, you know, spooky scenario. And then she did a thing which still to this day I think is absolutely genius. She draws. She's in her dream. She's lonely, but when she's awake again, she draws a face in the window of the house. So she draws face, the body, and the hands. And then she goes to sleep. And then when she's in the dream, she goes into the house. She goes up the stairs, and there's a boy there, but his legs are he's crippled because she didn't draw his legs. So like he's forevermore now. He can't walk, so he's in a wheelchair. And they have all these like adventures, kind of together. But then she draws some other stuff. She should have kind of stopped there. But she drew a man basically, which is her dad. And then the scary thing is she scrubs out his face in the picture, which you just know that's not going to turn out well. So when she falls asleep, there's a man there and his face is like basically missing and he's coming after her. And just all of these mad dream imagery like things is so inventive. And like, I'm just like, wow, it's based on Marianne Dreams, this book from, I think it's from the 60s. And then it was made into a 6-part TV show in the 70s called Escape Into Night, which is amazing. But this is the film version, and it's much more inventive, just much, much cooler. And again, I love seeing stuff set in the UK. There's a lighthouse in it. There's like cliffs. It's just very British and cool. I love it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Have you seen that show, Stu?
No, I haven't. No, have you?
Yeah, but like a long, long time ago. It seems like, Jed, it was almost like a comfort one for you as well. You go back to revisit that one.
It definitely is a comfort film. It just has a vibe, but you don't. Yeah. It's just there's a certain light in the UK which you can't shoot in America for the UK. Like the thing that I just filmed for, actually Pip's in that as well. I keep putting Pip and stuff. The thing I just this filmed, it was originally meant to be in America. They wanted it in America, but I'm like, no, the light's different. Like here, I can't say it's in America. I need this specific light, this light that I remembered from films that I liked, like Paper House, where you can't reproduce. It doesn't matter how good your gaffer is, your cinematographer, you can't reproduce this light that you get in here, I think. And you can see that in Paper House. There's another film from the 80s as well, another British film, just a little bonus called Dream Demon with Timothy Spall and Jimmy Nail. And I promise you, it's amazing. Dream Demon.
Man, I haven't seen that.
It's so good. But yeah, it just has this vibe, this obviously shot on film, so the grain's really, really cool. But yeah, Paper House, it's like one of those gateway horror movies because it's tangentially horror, but it's also just a really good drama and the special effects are incredible.
Quite like, it's like a story, it's like a game of two halves to an extent, because it's like, as she's building up this dream world, it's kind of like there's elements where you think, I think this might go sideways, but it might not.
Yeah.
And then there's kind of this point, Stu, where, yeah, she has this, she decides that the almost like the pressure of looking after this kid in her dreams is too much. She screws it up and chucks it away. And then that fucking just makes the dream world go a lot darker. Mm-hmm. And then it's a lot scarier after that point. But to start with, it's almost like, it's just psychological, really, and but elements of horror, and then they those themes come back and back more and more, like issues with her dad and that in the part. But it's very simply, like, it's quite cleanly shot. I think there's a lot of simple elements in it, and like you say about the light, that's a really interesting observation.
It's you know, it's something really intangible as well, and like it's hard to replicate, and I've tried to do it a couple of times. To get that light, and it's really hard to explain it as well to a colorist who's grading like a film. I was like, I need that kind of British color, that British from like British horror films of the late 80s and early 90s. There's a certain look to it which I absolutely love. It just feels like dangerous. Like, because with America, everything's so colorful. And actually, you get a little bit of Hellraiser, because Hellraiser was actually shot in London, in North London, in Dollis Hill. I actually live right next to the Hellraiser house, and you can see in Hellraiser there's a certain light. It doesn't look like LA. It's very much the UK. I absolutely love it.
Well, Jed, it's been lovely looking backwards at some incredible films, which are definitely going to be on my list of things to catch up on. And let's look forwards now. What's going on with you?
Me? I just finished filming something for a particular streamer. I can't talk about it. It's the thing that Pip's in. Not allowed to talk about it just yet, but it's pretty epic. I get to mess around with time travel, so that's good. And monsters again, which is great. So that'll come out some point this year. I have, multiple things that have been greenlit. Who knows what will happen there? I've got a game coming out as well. I've got,
can you tell us a little bit about the game that's coming
out? Yeah, the game's called Ghosts. It's a live action video game. It stars all the girls from Host, Alice Lowe from Carth Marenghi's Dark Place, Pip, and a bunch of other people that you might recognize, a couple of other people from Host. And it's basically a game where you get to, you're the producer director of a TV show, and you get to try and keep your TV show afloat and alive while crazy things are happening. And it's set in real time as well, so you can only play the game at 10 p.m. at night, because that's what time this TV show airs.
I love that concept, Jed, honestly.
Cheers, man.
Yeah, honestly, like, I think Pip first said that to me, and I just thought, God. Because, like in this day and age, like, if you look at all the streaming services, everything's so easy and accessible, right? Like, and then, like, we were saying this back when this conversation first started. Like, back when I was younger, I was lucky enough to have a telly in my room, but I had four channels to watch, and that's when I absorbed so many of these films.
There's a journey attached to it. You know, Jeb mentioned going to Blockbuster and he could afford three with that £10. And so you chose carefully.
Yeah.
And like, and so it's the same with record shopping. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd go to the record shop and you'd buy that record and you'd go home and you didn't have Spotify. You couldn't just listen to everything. So you treasure and you really sort of max what you've got. And I think that's when it starts to resonate. Whereas there's so much now that it's easy to just go after 10 minutes, oh, do you know, I'm not feeling this. And like, you might be walking away from the best fucking cinematic experience of your life. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But because it's so saturated, it's so easy to do that. Totally. The journey.
Exactly.
Limiting it makes you really, it just makes you savour it, doesn't it? Instead of just everything just being free, you're not grateful for it. You're really focused in that hour, and probably adds to the jeopardy of, I've got an hour to not fuck up here as well.
Exactly. And like, you know, because, you know, everything's so sanitized right now, no one's done this before. So, like, as soon as I announced it, like, the gaming world went crazy at me, like, genuinely, like, literal death threats, because I'm just like, make your own game then. It, like, no one's forcing you to buy this game. Yeah. But, you know, like, it's I think it's an interesting, different thing to do. And, like Hideo Kojima, who's the guy that, he's an amazing game developer. He's the guy behind Metal Gear Solid, Death Stranding, things like that. He is kind of like the person I look up to in the games world, where he takes chances. He made a game for the Game Boy Advance in the early 2000s called Boktai: The Sun Is in Your Hand, which is a game where you're a vampire hunter and you can use real sunlight to help you along the way. So there's like a solar panel on the back of the game on the Game Boy Advance, and it makes you go outside to use the sunlight to help you kill these vampires. And I'm just like, that's why I want you to have this physical experience, not just like a mindless kind of thing. So and you know, because like this is my first game, I'm just like, yeah, I'll just, you know, just get everyone involved. I need a creature, I'll just call up Jim Henson's creature shop, they'll make my creatures for me. And that's what they did. Like, it's I just didn't know what the rules are, and I still don't. I'm not playing, but I'm trying not to play by rules, because I'm just like, I'm just going to do it until someone tells me no, then I'll just keep doing it.
And you're having a lot of fun with it, mate. And I think if you can do that, I think Gat, when I was looking at some of your selections, and I was just trying to remind myself of other movies they'd done, like Gary Sherman, he did like Dead and Buried, and I read
Dead and Buried,
it's dope. And Cornwall again, so I don't know what's going on there. I think all horror films should just now be in the Southwest.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I just do things. I just have fun. Like I'm lucky enough to have lived a life where I just do things that I really enjoy and I care about. It's not like they're flippant. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it and I care about it. And I don't know what my legacy will end up being. But, you know, and I think that's the same thing here, Jed. Like, just keep on doing what you're doing, and we'll enjoy it, even if it is only for an hour.
Yeah.
An hour a day at 10 o'clock.
I know, it's more than an hour, but you might die before the hour's up. But no, you could be playing it for a long time, but you have to play it every day. It starts again at 10. So if you die, then that's it. You've got to start again the next day.
Awesome. And Jed, if people want to keep up to speed with all of your projects, where would you direct them to?
I would say Twitter. I'm trying to make JedShepherd.com. I haven't yet. So keep that in mind. But until then, just follow me on socials. Just at Jed Shepherd on everything, on Instagram and Twitter. Twitter's probably best. But I am trying to like phase away from social media. I always think to myself, Sam Raimi doesn't have social media. Steven Spielberg doesn't have social media. I know I need it to like promote stuff, but it's a lot of noise where it doesn't have to be.
Well, we'll tag you in it on our socials, so if people aren't following you already, then they will they can do so now. Jed, it's been an absolute pleasure.
A lot of fun
talking to you, mate. Thank you so much for giving up your time.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Cheers, Jed.
Absolute pleasure. Catch we're going to press stop. Don't go anywhere.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Our Core Listing, the podcast.